Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hey everyone, Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us again for our podcast this week. We're going to be interviewing Rich DiIorio. Rich is the CEO of InfuSystem, a publicly traded med tech company. And Rich has risen up from the ranks as a sales leader and has become the CEO of the organization. He's going to share some of his thoughts around his career, lessons learned, and looking forward to our conversation with Rich today. Rich is joining us from the Boston area. And Rich, can you give us just a little bit of your background, of your career?
Sure. So I was born and raised in Boston, went to BC, started out as a sales rep. I worked for some big companies in the pharmaceutical and medical device industry over the years. And I really found a home at InfuSystem in 2004. I started with the company actually as a sales rep in the Boston and New England territory. And over time, became a regional manager, VP of sales, GM, and now president and CEO. And I've been in this role for just over a year and a half, almost 2 years now.
Okay. Well, coming from a sales role and a general manager role to a CEO, what lessons have you learned in the last couple years about being a CEO at a fairly young age? For a CEO?
Yeah, so probably the most important thing I've learned, and fortunately I've been able to pull off in the last couple of years, is to build the right team. It's so important at this point that, you know, I can't get into the weeds every day as much as sometimes I want to. I just don't have the time to do it. And to have the right team that I can trust, that have the right talent, that can just take projects, run with them, I just know they're going to get done right. I know they're going to get done on time. It's been invaluable to me in this role. Especially as a newer CEO, I became CEO at 42 years old. So, having the right team in place has been so important, and it's been a very deliberate, 2 years, to get that right team in place. But I think we're there. We've elevated a lot of operators from within the company, people that really understand the job that their teams do. And then where we had some gaps, we filled in from the outside, but a lot of what we did was, internal promotions, like myself. And then we've added a couple, people from the outside as well, where we really needed the talent from there.
Got it. And we'll go back to kind of the building of teams in a minute. But one of the questions I like to ask each guest is, if you're able to go back in time and talk to a 22-year-old Rich and give him some advice with what you know now, what advice would you give him?
I would say that, you know, do everything you can, work as hard as possible, and don't listen to the people that tell you something can't be done. You know, if I had told people at 22, 23 years old when I was a sales rep that I'd be the CEO of the company, they probably never would have believed it. They never would have seen that as the career path. Mm-hmm. But you work hard, you do all the right things, you learn as much as you can learn from as many people as possible, and you put yourself in the right position so when the opportunity knocks, you're ready. I tell a lot of people that it's kind of like the Tom Brady story, right? No, he was a 6th-round draft pick. No one thought he would ever see the field. Drew Bledsoe gets hurt. He steps right in, and now he's arguably the greatest of all time. But if he wasn't ready at that moment, it never would have happened. If he waited for the moment to try to get ready, it would have been too late. And I think that at 22, they were all, you know, when I first met my wife right around that age, I told her that this was the goal someday. And she might have laughed at me early on, but a lot of people thought that, yeah, you know, it's one of those things. There's so few of them. It's so hard to do. And my advice would be, put your head down, do your job, learn as much as you can from as many people as possible, and make it happen and be ready.
On the flip side of that, any advice that you received that you would ignore now, knowing what you know?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it ties together. It's the whole concept of people saying that you just can't do it. You know, whether, and you learn that as a sales rep too, you know, you knock on a lot of doors and a lot of them get slammed in your face. But you just have to, keep plugging along. You have to move to the next day, the next meeting, the next project. And when people doubt you, so that's a big motivator for me. And it always has been, whether it's been athletically, in school or at work, it's, you know, the second people start to doubt me, that it motivates me even more. And I think that that's important, is don't listen to the people that tell you that you can't do it. Otherwise, you know, everyone that's been successful in life has had that moment where someone's told them they couldn't. And I always use the sports analogies. I mean, Michael Jordan got cut from his high school basketball team, right? If he had quit at that time when someone told him that he wasn't good enough, you know, where would he be today? So I think it's important, just you know, put your head down and work as hard as you can, create your own luck, and also don't listen to the people that tell you you can't do it.
That's good. Well, tell me a little bit about mentors, the importance of having them, and especially moving into the CEO role. Are there people around you that you've intentionally put in place to help you as you, you know, take a look at some new challenges? And tell me a little bit about your thoughts around that.
Yeah, so I've been fortunate over the years. We've never had a formal mentoring program at any company I've worked for, but I've been very fortunate to have people, whether above me or peers, just kind of organically it happened, where they helped me kind of maneuver through the company, especially as a sales rep, learning how to work cross-functionally and not just worry about the sales piece of things. And I'm lucky, even in this role, again, as a young CEO, we have a couple of really experienced board members that really, you know, take me under their wing, and I talk to them every week or two and just bounce ideas off of them, problems that I have. They've been in the seat before, so they understand it. And can really work through the challenges with them. And it's good to have that sounding board. Without that, it'd be really lonely without those sounding boards, for sure. But to have access to people that have been there, done that, have experienced probably everything that I ever will, has been huge for me. And on a weekly basis, I rely on them.
So coming into a new role, what were some of the things that you did in your first 90 days of being a CEO? Again, you knew the company, you knew the people that were there, but what were some things that you did as far as kind of set the direction and communication as far as within the company?
Yeah. So the very first thing is I got up and I explained to everybody that, you know, we were here to run the company the right way. And there was no hidden agenda. We were going to run it as if it was our own business and it was our money that we were going to spend. And that was going to drive all of our decisions. So if it was our money and our company and we were privately owned by the team, would we make that decision? Would we spend that money? Would we try to grow there? Would we improve our efficiencies? And if the answer was yes, then we would do it. If the answer is no, we wouldn't do it with our own money, but maybe we do it now. The answer was no. So that was kind of the guiding force. And it still is to this point. One of the most important things I think I did in the first 90 days was really take a step back and assess the team and look at, did we have the right talent? Do we have them in the right seat? Was there the trust and loyalty to the company? Did they have the passion for what we do? I didn't want anyone, and I still don't want anyone on my direct team or anyone in the company that's here just because it's the job. I want them here because they want to make a difference in the company and a difference in the world and what we do with patient safety and patient treatments. I think we really do, and I want a team built around that philosophy.
Tell me a little bit about as you're assessing talent and looking at it. I know we did an interview with someone that's actively involved on the talent side a few weeks ago. But tell me a little bit of your thoughts around that and kind of how do you assess talent in your organization and making sure the right people are in the right spots?
Yeah, so we do a lot of succession planning. We did bring in a phenomenal person that understands the people side of things. That was definitely a weakness within the company that we had. But ultimately, you know, for me, the most important thing we can do as a leader is build the right team. And a big part of that is the interview process. And we really, really put people through the gauntlet. So they interview with their peers, people above them, below them. You know, assessing their talent is pretty easy, right? After the first couple interviews, sometimes even on the phone, you can tell if technically they're good enough. Right. And there's a lot of people that meet that need. And our CFO is a perfect example. We interviewed hundreds of people over the phone. He had 14 interviews with the company, whether it was with the board, myself, the team he was going to work with, people that were going to work for him. And it was really a cultural fit that we were looking for. You know, did we feel like we could trust him? Did we feel like he had the passion for not just for his job, but for the company and what we do? And, you know, it took about two interviews to figure out that, yes, no question about it, he had the jobs to do the job. But after that is, you know, is it the right fit for the company? Because I think that's the most important part. The talent's the easy part to assess, but the culture is really difficult. And so we want to take our time, make sure that we have a lot of eyes on it, make sure it's the right fit. And that's how we've done it over the last couple of years.
So as being the person that is kind of that, I always look at the CEO, the top person is someone who is definitely the guardian of the culture. And making sure that the culture stays healthy. Tell me a little bit about how do you influence culture within your organization?
So I think there's a couple things. I think for me, every decision we make is driven by the patient. And I want that passion within the company. So that's a big piece of it, is that we're here to do a bigger job than just what we do every day. And I try to influence the team in that way. I also, from a culture standpoint, I'm a big believer in if you treat your team the right way, the people that work for the company, then they'll treat your customers, they'll treat your patients right. And one of the first things I did is we did a big review of our benefits program. We're implementing wellness programs, mentor programs. We're doing a lot of different things to have the team understand that we're here for them, right? That it's not the other way around, that we're here to serve them. We're here to help them however we can, give them the training, the tools that they need to do their job to the best of their ability, but also treat them fairly and just to do the right thing by them. And that's, I shouldn't say it's a big change from the company, because I've been here almost 15 years and the company's always been great to me, but you can always do better. And for me, in my seat, that's where I can make a big influence, right? We can make the investment in the team when things are going well and we have the cash. Sure, we have to invest in the business. We have to do other things with our capital, but I don't think there's any more important place we can do important things than with the team themselves.
Yeah. So now being, and you're publicly traded, which mm-hmm. adds a new dimension as far as to the job, but working with your board and the investors, what are some lessons that you've learned about that as far as in the last couple of years?
So it's definitely different, especially as an individual contributor, as a sales rep for all those years. It's unique to have a board and shareholders. So, you know, a lot of people think, well, CEO, you don't have a boss. I think people in my family thought that when I first took the job. It couldn't be more opposite. I feel like everybody's my boss, whether it's one of the 280 plus employees we have in the company, the board of directors, or our shareholders. I feel like, and I do answer to everybody. Ultimately, I'm kind of the last stop, and everything I do, all those people can hold me accountable. So it's a little bit different with the board. It's not one boss, it's multiple people and different personalities, but you know, I couldn't ask for a better board. We get along great. We have the same strategic vision. I think I'm very fortunate, especially in my first public company CEO role, to have that alignment where there's really no problems internally. You know, we're lockstep in every possible way. And I think our shareholders too, we're a smaller company, and a lot of our shareholders are long-term value investors. They've been in the stock for years. And I think they're very supportive of what we do, and that's why they're still here. So I'm very, very fortunate in both ways that I don't have a lot of problems at those levels. But yeah, I certainly have a boss, and I have about probably 300 of them when you add it all up. So it's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell me about, how do you stay focused? You know, there are some weeks that things are going well, and there's some weeks that the wheels fall off. How do you get focused back as a, you know, the leader and making sure that you stay kind of focused on doing the right things?
Sure. I think it's at any level, I think it's all about priorities, right? So you have to have your priorities. You have to set them, and you have to abide by them. And it is tough to stay focused, and it's easy to be distracted because there's a lot of good things going on. There's some bad things going on too, whether it's internally or externally. But you have to keep those priorities. You know, the saying of, if you have too many priorities, you have none. And that's absolutely true. We as a team sit down all the time and talk about that, and we reset them when we have to adjust them. But you have to keep that list, close by at all times, so that you can really, when you're involved in something, you have to be able to look at those priorities and say, is what I'm doing today impacting those priorities? And if it's not, then you have to move on and get back to what you have to focus on. But it's not an easy thing, and I don't think it's easy at any level. Probably a CEO, it's a little more difficult because there's so many inputs coming from so many different directions. But it's really just, it's a prioritization piece.
Any books that you've read that you think have been helpful for you as a leader, and anything that comes to mind that you think would be beneficial for somebody that's either a new leader or somebody that's, maybe partway through their career that's been helpful to you?
Sure. So there's definitely a few that not only have I read, but I reread fairly frequently. Mm-hmm. The first one is Five Dysfunctions of a Team. It talks a lot about, you know, trust is the key to the team. And without that, it doesn't matter how good somebody is and how good their talent is, that if you can't trust them and the team can't trust them, then, you know, it just can't work. And that was a big thing for me, is that, you know, as a sales rep, hey, if you're a great sales rep, you're a great sales rep. And because you're an individual contributor, your personality and the trust, it doesn't have to be there necessarily. But as you work your way up through the organization, especially as with the C-suite and the senior management team, if we don't have that trust within the team, we can go find talented people. That's pretty easy. Right. But having that cultural fit and having that trust where we can go into a meeting and fight it out and come out with one voice. I don't think you can operate without that. So that was definitely one of the books that I read early on and I continue to read. I'm also a big Simon Sinek fan. And I think Start With Why is, to me, as important as any book that I've read. And I've given it out to the leadership team along with his Leaders Eat Last book. And I think it's so critical that the purpose isn't to collect a paycheck or have a job. And especially in healthcare, we have a higher purpose in treating our patients and making sure that they're safe when they're on our devices and using our service. I think it's so important to have that. And, going back to the culture piece, that's why it's important. Mm-hmm. I want everyone to show up every day and not just enjoy the job and the people that they work next to, but really have a purpose on what they're doing and why they're doing it every day. And if they have that focus, I think we'll do all the right things. So those three books, Start With Why, Five Dysfunctions of a Team, and Leaders Eat Last, I think I've read all those books multiple times.
Yeah, good stuff. It's interesting. Those are, I don't think those books have been mentioned yet by our guests, and those are our excellent books. Technology can be either something that helps you, or I think sometimes can be a distraction. But anything in the technology side of things, apps, technology that have made you more effective or efficient in your role?
Yeah, so probably the single biggest one, and you're right, they can be positive and negative. And I think my phone is as much as I rely on it as can be a negative because it's tough to turn it off.
Sure, for sure,
especially when you work out of a home office, it can be difficult. But I actually got a new laptop. It's a Microsoft Surface laptop. The reason I switched is what I realized over the last couple of years is I don't produce a lot of information. I consume a lot, right? So I get a lot of inputs, like I mentioned, from a lot of different people, a lot of different sources. And it's tough to do on a true laptop. But with this thing, I can take the screen off. I can write on it with a pen and mark it up. And it allows me to consume information a lot easier than produce it. And it's been a godsend in the last few months that I've had it. It's made things a lot easier. I travel a lot. So on the plane, I can use it as a tablet. Like I said, I can mark up documents with a pen. So I'm not constantly typing and editing things that way. It just makes it a lot quicker and easier for me. And it's fairly small and portable. And when you travel, it's pretty important.
Good. So outside of work, I've been talking with a number of the people I've been interviewing, and it's always interesting to hear what outside of work, what people enjoy doing. What is it that kind of gets your energy back, and anything particular outside of work that you enjoy doing?
So I'm a big golfer. I love to golf, although I don't get to play as much as I'd like to. But what I spend almost all of my free time doing, including tonight and last night, I have two boys, a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old. And they both play a lot of baseball, especially living in the Northeast. It's a lot of baseball, like 170, 180 games between the two of them every year. But there's nothing I like more than being at the field watching those two play baseball. I absolutely love it. It's a good break for me mentally. That is when I do shut down my phone and put it away, because I enjoy watching them on the field. It's a blast. And I'm a baseball guy anyways. I played in college. So it's the sport I have a passion for. And to watch those two guys and how much they love it and how hard they play every day, it's great. And it's really my mental break, those couple hours. And I feel like I have at least one game every night, and some weekends, 7, 8, 9 games during the weekend. It's a nice reprieve for me to put things away, not have to think about much, and just enjoy watching them.
Good. Well, yeah, no, I remember my kids are growing now, but remember spending a lot of times on fields and watching games, and it's definitely an important time. Mm-hmm. Well, give some any parting advice that you would give a leader that's starting out that you think would be valuable.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, and I've had this mantra since I was younger, probably back in the 21, 22-year-old phase of my life. I think just starting with, just outwork everybody. Like, if you have to, just start there and prepare yourself in every possible way. Talk to as many people in the organization, outside the organization, not just in your functional silo. So as a sales rep, don't just talk to other sales reps. Talk to people in the marketing team and the revenue cycle team and the warehouse and finance, and learn as much as you can possibly learn. And like I mentioned before, be ready for your opportunity. You don't know when it's going to be or how important it's going to be. And for me, you know, a lot of people would say, hey, at 42 years old as a sales rep in the same company after 15 years becoming CEO is pretty lucky. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I also think I created that luck and I was ready for the chance. I didn't wait for that opportunity to pop up and say, oh, now I have a couple months to get ready. I was doing that for 15 years. I never knew when that moment would happen. I didn't know if it was going to be 15 years later or 30 years later. But I knew that when it was, when that opportunity knocked, I wanted to be ready and I wanted to take advantage of that. And, you know, you can start that early on in your career. There's no reason to wait to get yourself in that spot. Learn as much as you can. Take classes if you have to get yourself better. And if you find a weakness, then go learn and figure that out. That's where the mentors can help quite a bit as well. But just be ready for that chance and be hungry for it. And in the meantime, just outwork everybody and people will notice that.
That's great. Well, thanks, Rich, for your time and your insights today. It's definitely, I'm sure, helpful for those that are listening, and wish you continued success in your career.
Great. Thanks, Mark. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.